Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
And I just want to wish all our listeners a very happy and blessed Monday today. This is Maxine, and I'm delighted to be back with you and with my special co-host, Jeannie St. John Taylor. Good morning, Jeannie.
Good morning, Maxine, and you know I always love talking with you. And you know, I would like to say you sent around to OCW a ways to pray for all the persecuted Christians in the Middle East and around the world. And I would just want to say that was wonderful. Thank you for that. I loved all those ideas and the reminders to pray. You want to tell people when we're all going to pray and maybe they could join us? Who that is.
Well, okay, listeners, we are praying, and specifically, you can pray anytime you want, but on Sunday afternoon between 1 and 5, we plan to just, you can take as much time or as little time as you want, and there is a list that has been compiled by one of our prayer team ladies. Petey Prater put this list together, complete with things to pray and scriptures to also pray through. So it's very nice to help the people around the world in a way that we can very easily do with prayer. And prayer is one of our greatest weapons on the face of the earth. So let's enable that to go out and help our Christian brothers and sisters that are being persecuted.
And we're not praying on air, listeners. We're just all praying at that time on Sundays, individually. Yes, and that's a powerful, powerful tool.
And if anyone wants that list of prayer materials, go to www.OregonChristianWriters.org and contact me, the president, Maxine, or Sue Myholer, the business administrator, and we will send you that list so that you can join
us. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But today we are talking with a lady who's very familiar with what it means to be persecuted as a Christian. Jeannie and I enjoyed Olga Gladkivero so much 2 weeks ago and felt she had such a powerful message to share with our listening audience that we have invited her back because there are stories to tell and there are reasons that the past affects what we do and think today. If we forget the past, we're in danger of repeating it. And there are lessons about what the Soviet communism lifestyle brought upon people, and it was persecution and the demise of the Christian church, and on and on and on with the poor treatment of individuals that were not meeting up to some dictatorship's ideal of a lifestyle. So her father and her family were put into very dangerous situations. And I just want to welcome Olga onto the program today and let you know that we're going to be still talking about her father's writings, and that is called Voices from the Past, a collection of short stories preserving facts. And we want to just welcome you again today, Olga. We are so happy you've decided to join us twice.
Welcome, Olga.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be with you again.
Hey, can I ask her a question, Maxine, before we start? You're not going to say no, are you? No.
Well, you're going to go.
Okay.
You got a green light. So.
Olga, I was wondering, I bought your book, and I'm loving it, and I'm loving all the stories, and it's like 700 pages. As I read them, these stories really have the ring of truth to them. I get the feeling that it's pretty much nonfiction that reads like fiction, that every story in here is true. Is that correct, or am I judging that incorrectly? Is it just basically true?
Well, basically, my father wrote the stories from life that he experienced, his friends experienced, his friends told him, from the family, what we have lived through. So he combines sometimes experiences in one story. Sometimes it is individual story. Sometimes it's a little bit longer. But it is from life.
Yeah. Yes.
It is from real
this
life. It's
a non-fiction book that takes us back into the history lessons.
It is fictionalized truth.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Okay.
Which is powerful. And this is powerful.
So, Olga, before we go much further, would you remind our listeners why the situation going on in eastern Ukraine is so painful for you today? Because we're under great threat over there, too.
Well, for me, it is painful because the fight is in the place where I was born and where I lived until I was 20 years old. And my relatives, my cousins, still live there.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is, you know, personal pain for me.
Are they safe right now?
Well, I see on the television their buildings destroyed. People are leaving. They are trying to go anywhere they can find, only exiting from the combat zones. And the Russian separatists, they would like to go to this, to be divided and go to the part of Russia or being independent. But it was all actually orchestrated by the Russia and by the Putin himself, because he needs this for his economic purposes, for the oil and gas that he has. To use the territory of the Ukraine to go to Europe and European countries to sell the oil and gas.
Mm. Olga, how heavy is the Christian persecution? Do you know in there? And do you know if your relatives that are there are Christian or not? And if it would not compromise them for you to answer that question?
Well, right now the Christian church is not... it's not oppressed like it used to be during the Soviet Union time,
mm-hmm.
but it is definitely controlled by the government. But the place, the things that I will be reading to you today in the what is my father's book is talking is about the past, about the years from 1917 to 1991, when the Soviet Union dismembered.
Okay. Olga, why don't we just let you go into a story that you have volunteered to tell from the book, Voices from the Past. And this is about Petrushka. Who was Petrushka to start with? And then would you tell that story, please?
Okay. Petrushka was actually my mother's youngest baby brother. And it is a true story about him that we always knew. The only thing that my father made it as a nice story to read.
Yes.
But the facts are true. Petrushka was a little altar boy in the Orthodox Russian Orthodox Church. And it is the story about that time.
Okay. Are you ready to tell it?
Yes, I will start.
Okay.
Petrushka, do I really have to mention that it was the year of famine? Yes, I do, because there were no times of abundance yet, only years of famine and half starvation. Petrushka, of course, did not understand what the times of abundance and the years of famine were. In the course of his short life, he only knew that he was always hungry, his kiddie eyes twinkling like shiny chips of coal, inquisitively studied the world that was opening before him. And his slightly blurry tongue continuously posed questions. And what is this? And what is this for? And why is this? And peered into his father's kind, smiling eyes, who satisfied him with answers, even though he did not always understand them. The whole world smiled to Petrushka. His stepmother smiled, even then, drily and grudgingly. The neighbor smiled, smiled also some man who came to his father, who was a tailor, with orders for his fittings. It seems that even the wickedly vicious Arab, enormous shaggy dog, who was feared by everyone in town, clinching his heavy chain, would wag his tail, get up, shake off dust, and smile through his long, drab, dirt-colored coat covering his eyes. But for some reason, Petrushka was always hungry. He was hungry even while he was smiling back at other people. But why? Petrushka quite seriously thought that everyone always wanted to eat. It did not mean that all of his thoughts and feelings, desires, and aspirations were directed only by food. You could not say that he always starved, but he got so used to being half-starved that this state seemed to the most common, not only to him, but to all other people around. I suppose he was not wrong. There were so few well-fed people that it was impossible to encounter them on the streets. Possibly they were simply hiding from the half-starved and starved people. Maybe they were afraid that they would be eaten right there on the sidewalk. To tell you the truth, he heard about how once upon a time people ate and drank. Oh, what a tasty conversation were this. But it was so incredible to hear, even from the lips of his father, whom he absolutely trusted, that it seemed to Petrushka that he simply listened to a very deliciously tasty fairy tale. Once his stepmother came from the market, and as usual, she brought some news. "The cathedral will be closed," she informed Petrushka's father. "There is nothing to be surprised by," the father replied to her, sewing a button to the jacket he was remaking. "You can close the cathedral, destroy, ransack it, but it's impossible to corrode the people's faith. They want to put either a theater or a movie theater there. They can even make the cathedral into a public restroom. You can expect anything from them." Petrushka listened to the conversation and thought that his father knew everything, understood everything, and judging by the tone of his answers, knew that they were not regular people, but the vagabonds. His father always called them they. This way, warning Petrushka. "Petrushka, look, I am only saying this to you. Don't tell anyone." "I know," the little boy answered softly, and he never told anyone how they were really called. Because if his father tells him that he should not tell, then he, Petrushka, would never tell anyone. On Sunday, Petrushka goes to church with his father, to the cathedral. He passes through right to the altar and puts on altar boy supplies. Batyushka, the holy father, stands beside, quietly reads a prayer. He always stands this way and prays. Petrushka dared to ask, "Father, is it true that cathedral will be closed?" Father Constantine, after crossing himself, leans toward the little boy. "They say that, my dear. They talk. Well, my dear boy, this government is not ours. It did not come from God. We will pray. We will pray." And Petrushka prayed. He prayed through the whole Mass. And it looked like God had heard his prayers. The rumors died away. Two priests with the deacon served the mass in the old cathedral every day because it was the time of Lent. And the cathedral was very old and imposing one. It was the only building like this in the whole town. What beautiful services there were in this cathedral. Petrushka loved his splendor. He loved the beautiful soothing singing and always sincerely prayed about all the people. But especially fervently, he prayed for his deceased mama. And even though he did not remember her, but his father often talked about her. He prayed also for his father, sisters, and brothers, and also for himself a little. In those years, there were many requiem services, memorials for the people. People died too often. It was hard to say whether they died from sickness or from hunger. And the requiem services were performed not only for those who were buried by the priest, but also for those who died there. Petrushka knew where this there was. Everybody knew. This there was not far away from the cathedral. You needed only to turn the corner, and there it was there. And usually for the memorial services, the God-fearing women, old and young, brought some kalifia. They offered it to some anyone a spoon of it. Petrushka, though, would get everything that was left on the little plates. It was more than he could get on a little spoon. But the kalifia was always different. Some people made it from rice, others with wheat, still others with peeled barley, and there were some people who brought a kalifia with millet or with even with semolina. And where would they buy rice, for example? It does not grow on the sidewalk. You cannot find it in the shops. And it was not affordable to everyone at the market. But Petrushka did not acknowledge all that. He ate everything that was left on the plate. Once, they were so hungry at home that even the father, tightening his belt, uttered, "Oh my, how hungry I am." Petrushka was such a smart boy, even though he was a little boy. And starting with the next day, he began bringing home the kalifia that was left on the small plates and which the poor women gave him. He even found a special jar for it at home. He cleaned it, thoroughly washed, and started to bring it to the cathedral, hiding it under his jacket, and usually brought it back home full. "Here is some kalifia for you, Papa, so that you would not be hungry." And the father, with the tears in his eyes, would accept the filial offering and eat it to not offend little Petrushka. The Lent passed, and in the spring after the Easter, the cathedral was closed. They closed it. Petrushka and his father continued to live half-starved, just as they did before.
Thank you for that story, Olga. You've taken us back to a point in time that touches hearts, and I can envision that little boy. And today we see these people around the world that are very starved as well, and it just breaks my heart to think so many go without a spoonful of food, as this little guy was doing. Who were they? Would you explain to our listeners who they are and what there is?
They were the secret Soviet police, which actually were the arm of the government that did all the arresting, sending people to the gulags, to the labor camps. Sometimes they just put them in the prison. Sometimes they shoot them. It depended all how much they were able to convince them to renounce their faith. They did.
And where was there? Did there? You said there was around the corner.
There was the building, in the prison where the secret police, KGB, and NKVD, they may change the name through the years, but it was a secret police where the building was, the offices
and it was
that, the prison.
And it was that close to the cathedral, just around the corner.
And it was right in the center of the town.
Wow.
Yes. Right in my hometown in Slavyansk, which is now right in the middle of the site.
It's just heartbreaking. You know, there was one story in your book that talks about standing in line for bread. Is it the same time that this one happens, or do you want us to tell us a little bit about standing in line just for bread?
Yes, we stayed in line at night, through the night, to be in the first 10, 15 people who can get into the store. This hunger was in Soviet Union several times through the years. The first one was in the 1920s, then in the 1930s, and most of the time it was imposed by the government in order to suppress people and to obey. In the 30s, it was the time when the land was taken away from the peasants, and they had to eliminate all the rich peasants because they were the ones who did not want to give up the land. So they confiscated the grain. They sent all the people who were called kulak, that means the wealthy peasants, and they sent them to Siberia. By sending all the people who were most producing grain, they introduced actually artificially the hunger in the country. And that was the artificially produced hunger.
This reminds me of the Fiddler on the Roof musical that I enjoy watching. And how they all had to leave their homes and head away from there because of the threat that was upon them and the burning down of their homes. How do you see what was happening then maybe being coming back upon the people today, Olga?
Well, what you see now in the Middle East, what you see what is going on with all the people who want to grab the power and impose their laws, their ideas, their religion on people, it is repeating of history. In repeating of history, we can prevent only by knowing what was going on before. By knowing history, we can prevent certain things from happening by selecting leaders, by finding out the way of eliminating the threat. And when the people are not aware of the history, what's happening, they don't know how dangerous it is, and they will not act.
And that's what you see as the purpose of this book. Am I correct, Olga? To not only to share your father's stories, but to share the stories so that people are warned that this happened before and could happen again. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's why I decided to make this work after my retirement from teaching. Mm-hmm. I decided that now my father left me all the materials, all the newspapers where the stories were written. That's why they are short stories, because they were all written for newspapers and journals, for immigrant Russian journals and newspapers in England, New York, San Francisco, in Buenos Aires mostly. That were the major places that he actually was like a freelance writer. And he told me, he brought me his materials after he had a little stroke, and he felt that this was the time for him to leave in my inheritance. And he brought all the copies of the newspapers and journals, and also some of the stories that they were not published yet. They were manuscript. And he asked me, please preserve them and try to find the way of letting the people read them, and find out the history that is will be important for them to know for the future.
Well, I think it's very important because we are on the precipice of falling back into some very bad dictatorship type of governments. And whether they'll be called Soviet socialists again, I don't know, but Putin is definitely making his appearance on the scene in very big ways right now. And so is this ISIS group in the Middle East. It's become a very big concern for the rest of us around the world, and the sooner we wake up and pay attention to it, I think the sooner the threat can be quieted. But what do you see coming out of Russia right now as far as their next move, Olga?
Who knows the Putin's head? He wants to reconstitute the Soviet Union, if not by grabbing the territory, but putting his influence like it was after during the Cold War with the Soviet Union, that they had half of this. Europe was under Soviet Union at that time. And he has economic interests because he needs to make money from the oil and gas that he can pump to the Europe and other countries, but also because his ideology is to reconstitute the might of the Soviet Union. He does not want to give up, and he doesn't want that America, United States, will be a competitor. So he might do many, many things. Who knows? Who knows? He is using the opportunity now that there are so many problems in the world, and his action could go unpunished, and he takes this opportunity.
Olga, would you like to tell us how readers can get hold of you, get hold of your book, all the kind of helps that you have for them to do that?
Yes. The book is available on Amazon, and it could be ordered through the Barnes & Noble or from the publisher that is called Ex Libris. And e-books are available everywhere where e-books are sold. And the important thing that there are many books, they are called Voices from the Past. They have to go by the author. My father's name is exactly Orest M. Gladky. And if you look at Orest Gladky and Voices from the Past, that's the book. I also would suggest that the people who would like to have to who want to read only the long excerpts from the book, that they are available in many places. And the Amazon has lots of people who read the book and wrote about it on the author page, again, Orest M. Gladky author page. And if they want to send me email to therobooks@northstate.net. I will send them the long list where they can find it without paying anything to read lots of stuff that is available on the web.
Okay, that's Vero, V-E-R-R-O, books?
Vero books at northstate.net.
Vero Books at northstate.net, listeners. Vera, Olga, is there one more thing you'd like to leave our listeners with? Our program just ends too fast with you because you have got such a marvelous insight into our history lessons that we don't want to forget. Is there something that you'd like to leave as a parting message for our listeners today?
Yes. Pray that the leaders of the world, of the free world, will take care of all the places that they are now in flame, all the places that they are trying to enslave the rest of the people and force them into the fate that they like, which is very, very medieval, maybe really medieval type of fate that we just could not afford to have for the world.
That is an excellent parting prayer. That is excellent. Yes. Pray that the leaders of the free world can come out and squash what's going on with the leaders that are grabbing all the power, that the people might be safe. Vera, we've enjoyed, I keep wanting to call you Vera. Olga, we have so enjoyed talking with you again today. Jeannie, did you have any parting comments to make before we have to let the show close?
Well, no, just that this is wonderful. The book is wonderful. The fact that her father wrote in short stories is so what readers today find easy to read. So if you pick up this book, the short stories are so short you can read a story and then read another one later, almost use it like a devotional, like people do that. So that's a great format for it, Olga.
Perfect.
Yes,
well, God
you.
Bless you, and I do pray the Lord has mercy on the people that are being persecuted right now. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Thank you, Olga.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at the river. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.